We're about to hear a story from John's Gospel. And it's the Gospel that is distinctive for its great expansive stories. Where other Gospels capture a scene in just a few words, it's as though the writer of John's Gospel takes that moment and just opens it up really wide. There are these convoluted conversations where, as the reader listening in, it's kind of humorous how words get misconstrued, how Jesus picks up on misunderstanding in a way that doesn't really resolve it, but moves it into a journey of discovery. So that we've got a man named Nicodemus who's asking, how can a grown person crawl back into his mother's womb and be born again? And we've got the woman at the well imagining that she might never have to fetch another drop of water in her whole life. And by the end of the story in which a blind man receives his sight, the people with sight are left wondering if they might be blind. Why, might we wonder, is the Jesus we encounter in John's Gospel so confusing? Why can't he just tell it straight, tell it plain? Well, maybe he's not so bent on telling us something as taking us somewhere. It's in John's Gospel early on that we hear Jesus say, "Come and see." What Jesus seems to be about in John's Gospel right from the beginning is taking us somewhere, showing us something. He's constantly opening up to us a fresh discovery of what is real. The story that we have this morning is all of that and more. Let's listen to it.
A reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 11. Hear what the church, what the Spirit is saying to the church. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was the one ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, He whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death, but rather it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and you are going to go there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble, because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him, Jesus said to her. Your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, The teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were there with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, Where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, See how he loved him. But some of them said, Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, Take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you have sent me. When he had said this, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, Unbind him and let him go. God's word is life.
It all begins with a daunting word. Lazarus is ill. This is Lazarus, brother of Mary and Martha, the family we hear more about than any other in Jesus' travels. Dear knows how they first met, but you get the sense there's a special bond between them, a deep care and affection. One of the sisters gets a message to Jesus, Your beloved Lazarus is ill. It's serious. There's no, please come, that's a given their friendship. Except that Jesus stalls deliberately. For there's something more to be revealed, we're told. And for all it seems kind of twisted, what's he doing messing with these lives is what it feels like. It's not really our job to either justify or judge his response. Perhaps it allows us to tune into that experience of crying out in need, God help me, only to be met by silence, absence, nothing at all. And what it's like to endure those times, what we do while we wait. Well, by the time Jesus arrives, Lazarus has been dead 4 days. With that belief that the spirit lingers in the tomb for even 2 days after death, you're not officially dead until the third day. In the meantime, the third day is the day God acts. Like when the wine ran out at the wedding at Cana. Like early that morning on the third day when they went to the tomb. But this is the fourth day. The day beyond all hope, beyond reach. Both Mary and Martha greet Jesus on arrival. Beneath their, "If only you had been here," you can almost hear it, can't you? "Where were you? You're too late." And then out of Martha's mouth comes, "But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask." It's a kind of wildly trusting and rather guarded statement all in one. As though she believes something could be possible, yet it's out of her hands. "Your brother will rise again," Jesus says. "I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day," Martha affirms, moving into religious talk that takes her to some future time. But Jesus isn't there to talk religion. He's come to engage her and what's happening in her life, their lives, right there and then. "Martha," he says, "I am. I am the resurrection and the life." And Martha hears it like it's more religious talk. Well, it's not finally Jesus' way to talk her into something more, and so here begins another journey of come and see. "Where have you laid him?" Jesus asks. Notice the journey begins with his willingness to go with them to their hardest place. The place that holds the most pain, the most grief, the most hopelessness. This is sometimes how it goes. The journey begins with our saying to him, "Come and see." He follows them to the tomb, a cave with a stone lying against it. On arriving, he says to them, "Take away the stone." But Martha knows better. "Lord, the stench. What's he thinking? 4 days later, why make it worse than it is?" Well, Martha knows better. Jesus knows more. Jesus foresees the wonder of God at work. They move the stone. And Jesus calls Lazarus by name, calls Lazarus out of the tomb, calls him out of the place of death. Jesus calls Lazarus into life. Sounds not just a little weird, doesn't it? Until you begin to look at life on the ground, which is where Jesus wants to take us. Last Sunday night, I was informed that Alex Lawson was in hospital, suddenly very seriously ill. He had been told he had a few days, at the very most a week, to live. Some of you may remember Alex when he was part of our congregation a few years ago, a great Scot, a retired United Church minister, most recently from Lethbridge. He preached here a couple of times. When I went to see him on Monday, we had about 15 minutes together, 15 remarkable minutes. He was in the throes of really gathering up his life, beginning with how it began. Born into a dirt poor family, his father a coal miner in Scotland. His mother, having already given birth to a number of children when Alex came along, right from the very beginning, she couldn't stand him because he represented one more mouth to feed when there was no food to be had. So here's this child internalizing painful rejection. And then seeing his future, which was no future in the dark hellhole of a coal mine. When one day he saw an ad in the paper, the Hudson's Bay in Montreal was looking to hire a bagpiper who would come and play outside their store. And from there, his life began to blossom. Friends, encouragement along the way to become a minister, his studies at McGill that opened up even more worlds, his work in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, where he was instrumental in setting up a family life center that was all about supporting and fostering love within families. He recalled returning to an anniversary celebration of one of these centers, where the woman sitting next to him suggested he must be very proud of his accomplishments. And all he could think of to say was, it wasn't mine. This was God's dream. I just gave myself to it. And then he marveled to me how, from the start I had, which was such a dead end right from the very beginning, could my life become what it has? This is the love of God. It's miraculous. And then he goes on to say, well, if out of that came this, I can't help but wonder what the next chapter will hold. I could see it in his eyes. I could hear it in his voice, this wild anticipation. Do you know what it is to be called into life? To be pulled out of a dark hole, a dead end, a prison of yours or someone else's making? Do you know what it is to be raised from death to life? To find yourself standing up again? That's what resurrection means, stand up. When sickness or shame has laid you low, or despair or guilt, loss or injustice has left you withdrawn, gone away, as good as dead. And then lo and behold, you're breathing deeply again. The world is colorful again. There's a fire in your heart again. Do you know what it is to be called into life? Do you know what it is to be drawn out of that dwelling place of fear or self-doubt? To be hit between the eyes or visited somehow by an insight you would have never come to, your worldview so sealed, so sure? Do you know what it is to have glimpsed what you thought impossible, and there you stand, sensing something's up, something's breaking loose, breaking free. Knowing if you step out, the next chapter will be radical, radically new. Will mean a different you. There's that further scene in Lazarus' story where we see him standing there, miraculously alive, but his body still bound in burial cloths. There's still more that needs to happen for him to come fully into life. So what does Jesus do? He looks at all these astonished bystanders. He calls the friends and the family into the act. Unbind him, he says. Let him go. So maybe this is what it is to be an Easter people, a people who are attentive to the life-giving stirrings within and all around us, and a people who hear and respond to the call to have a hand in the rising of another, to help strip away the grave clothes that the life-giving power of God may be let loose in all its fullness. One way to think about the grave clothes is to think about the stories that we tell. The stories we tell ourselves, the stories that we tell each other that just keep us bound up. Stories that stop us, that shut us down, that hold us back from moving into a new future. Stories that tell us there's nothing we can do. The odds against are too big, too pervasive. The stories that tell us we can't afford it, or it's too late, we've gone too far, or we haven't done enough. There are so many stories that immobilize us. I wonder what those stories might be for you. The ones perhaps you've been told. The ones we tell ourselves, the ones we put on others. Stories that confine, that define, that if they were stripped away, where would we be? Who would we be? Meanwhile, we belong to a story that doesn't shy away from the reality of evil or devastation or death. And yet it's a story that boldly, that daringly affirms that even on the fourth day, the day beyond all hope, when the stench of death is real and potent, that there is a power for life at work right there, right here and now, to forge a new beginning, a new way, an open future. We belong to a great line of people, past and present, whose lives have been sustained in darkest places, who have known the pull and the grasp and the grace of a hand in their lives that brought them through into a brand new place. We belong to the Creator who is ever and always about the wild work of creating, whose power for life won't be stopped come what may, who wills a new tomorrow for the whole creation. Can you hear it? We belong. We belong. We belong. We are not alone. Indeed, we are not alone. We live in God's world, a world in which God's love is already throbbing in the heart of all living things, each living thing. Praise and thanks be to God. Amen.